Hello. Just a short message before we begin this week's podcast. I released my debut album last week here in Australia. It exploded onto the charts. It's number 2 on the country charts, number 8 on the Australia-wide chart, and number 35 on the all-comers Australian Record Industry Association chart. It's massive. And if you've already bought your copy either in-store or online, thank you. If you'd like to help me get to number 1, I've included a link in the podcast notes this week. Just click on that link and you can download the digital version of the album or buy a CD. Thanks for your support and your love, no matter where you are on earth. It means the world to me. Now, to this week's podcast. Hello and welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins. My voice is sore again. I sang nearly 50 songs last night. I hope you'll forgive me. It's great to have your company wherever you're listening on this day, this gift, this rotation of the planet. This is a podcast about the Camino de Santiago, or the Way of St. James, a series of pilgrimages across Europe. They say the Camino follows the Earth's ley lines. People say they are called to walk the Camino, and I agree. People say as soon as they heard about the Camino, they just knew they had to do it. I agree. They say they'd never heard about it, but once they did, they couldn't stop thinking about it. I agree. And if you're looking for a potion for your malady, I may have just the solution. El Camino de Santiago. The American novelist and poet Roman Payne said, "A person does not grow from the ground like a vine or a tree. One is not part of a plot of land. Mankind has legs so it can wander. Pilgrims wander." The Camino de Santiago is famous for its ability to renew, to provide an existential dialogue, a self-inspection, a spiritual oil change and grease. Put you up on the hoist, rattle around under the bonnet for a while and get you humming again. Well, this week my guest is from my hometown, Sydney. Andrew Zabo wrote to me to say he enjoys the podcast and he's walked the Camino, and the detail he shared about his journey made me sit up and listen, and I'm sure you will too. I caught up with Andrew at Sydney's Domain, a coffee shop on a sunny Sunday morning. Apologies for all the background noise. It was a magic morning, to be honest. I began by asking Andrew to tell us a little bit about himself.
Well, I am a 54-year-old. I'm a teacher, and my role at my school, I work in a private Catholic school and a Jesuit school, and my role is head of co-curriculum. So as head of co-curriculum, I'm in charge of all the fun stuff, everything that happens outside of the classroom, all the things that that the boys absolutely love. So it's all the sport, all the music, all the drama, all the public speaking, the chess club, all those sorts of things. Things that kids, you know, if they may not be good in the classroom, they get a chance to shine outside the classroom and you get to see them in a different light. So it's one of these jobs where seriously, I love my job. I love going to school every day. I wouldn't do anything else. Actually, it's not a job. It's a life. It's a living. Yeah.
You know, how did the Camino come into your life?
Well, okay. It was about 18 months ago, and my wife, who's also a school teacher at another school, she teaches a grade 1 class, she came home and she said, "Oh, there's this walk called the Camino," and her principal had come back from doing it in, I think, 2016, and he'd come back and he came to the staff and he said, "Right, I want you all to do this. It's a great experience." And so she came back and she said, "Do you want to do it?" And I went, "Wow, a walk? That sounds good." And I actually knew nothing at all about the Camino. So we're going back to 2017. So about a year before we went in 2018, I knew absolutely nothing. So that's how I sort of came to the Camino.
You walked with a school group in 2018 and you called it a posh version. What's a posh version of the Camino?
Yeah, posh version. Okay. This is the version where you pack a suitcase. My wife packed a suitcase. We got to the airport and it was 25 kilograms. We pack a suitcase and we were told that our suitcase was going to be moved from place to place. We stayed in all hotels and no albergos. We stayed in all hotels and each night we probably had a better than a pilgrim meal, and we probably had the better version of the vino tinto, the wine, each night. And but that's not to take away from that at all, that experience, because the thing about that experience was my wife would come home from work every day and say, oh, Maria did this and Michelle did that and blah, blah, blah. And it's an experience where she's talking about all of her teacher buddies at school. I don't know who they are. So this is a great experience to go on a trip and actually get to know them. And knowing that it was going to be a group of primary teachers from a Catholic school, it was really well organised. Each night, each of us were responsible for a couple of things. So every night we had a little bit of a daily reflection. And through those daily reflections, I just learned so much about all these just great people that she works with, like just fantastic people and people that have been through, you know, their own struggles and so forth. And they were free and open to talk about them on that experience. And so the posh experience was more like, oh, but while I was on it, you're walking past and you go, oh, what are all these people with backpacks? Big heavy backpacks and they're going into these hostels or albergos. What are they like? And so that sort of sparked a little bit of interest, going, well, here's one experience, this posh experience, and don't get me wrong, it was a lot of fun. It was a huge amount of fun, I really got to know them, but there was something else there.
Yeah, you wrote to me, you said something was missing. How did you sense something was missing? Or why did you sense something was missing if you're having this great experience?
Well, I could see all these other people that were walking and you know, a lot of people that are walking on the Camino, having now done it a second time, a lot of people are walking, you can identify them by countries. You know, people have little flags and things on their backpacks and so forth. And we did get a couple of odd conversations with some other people, but we had a group of 17, so a lot of the time we were walking with people within the group, and on a daily basis we were just swapping around and having conversations with different people and getting to know each other really well. But there wasn't an opportunity like this year's opportunity to step outside that group and actually get that full Camino experience where you get to meet people from all over the world, every different country. Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting, because that's such an integral part of it. But you being with the group of 17 on your inverted commas posh version, you could sense something wasn't quite right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There was that missing, and I kind of go back to like the movie The Way, where I actually watched that after we did the posh version, and I went, oh look, here's a group of people that they sort of just picked each other up on the way, and I felt like I wanted to do that. So then after that experience, I then started talking to other people that had done it a different way.
Yeah.
You know, in a smaller group.
Yeah, okay. And so this, you decided to go back. And this is where it gets interesting. Tell us about your journey leading up to your second Camino.
Yes, well, okay. So my journey, the first Camino, I've always been a big guy, okay, for all my life. And my weight had ballooned out to about 120 kilos. And we only walked from Astorga to Santiago. And even within that, we actually skipped a couple of towns because we're all on our school holidays. We only had a 2-week break. So we needed to get this in to about a 10-day walk. So we did about 200 kilometres. And so here I was. Even we were walking each day on with a little pack, just with, you know, some snacks and some water and you know, a jacket or something if it rained, etc. Because our things were being moved. So I wasn't carrying a heavy pack, but I was carrying a heavy body. And at the end of a few days, so one of the worst days was walking down to Asebo, down to Molinaseka, which is quite a steep descent. Mm. We got to the bottom there, and literally I thought my ankles were going to explode. They were swollen. We actually ended up, there's a little bridge over to where the hotel was, and we could see the water there. I basically just went down there and took my shoes off and put my feet in the icy water to get a bit of an ice bath, checked into the hotel, and I remember waking up in the middle of the night and literally not being able to walk. And this was like day two of a 10-day walk, and I'm thinking, geez, this is not good. After I finished, I thought, I'm just getting too big. And I've been big all my life. I've lived with being overweight all my life. And it's something that's run in our family, okay? And so there's obviously an overweight gene, because a couple of my sisters are also overweight. And one of my sisters, who was larger than me, about 3 or 4 years ago, she decided to make a huge change of direction in life. And she underwent this operation called a gastric sleeve. Okay, a gastric sleeve is basically where they remove a portion of your stomach so that you can't eat very much anymore. And it pretty well changed her life. She went from about 150 kilos and now she's down to about 90 kilos.
Golly!
And she was a lot bigger than me, but the change in her life has just been unbelievable. Like, she's younger than me, and she's got two young boys in primary school, and literally I don't think she could keep up with her young boys, and now she's just full of energy. Whereas me, my story is a little bit different. I wasn't as big, but I was big. But you see, my life has always revolved around sport, and so I could keep my weight in check. So playing sport, playing rugby, playing basketball, playing whatever, I was into it all, and that's been my life. But when you stop doing that, when you stop playing, when you get older, that's when the weight starts to pile on, because you kind of just keep eating the same amount, but you're not doing the same amount of exercise. And it got to a stage where I was getting pains in my knees and my ankles, and I saw how the outcome for my sister was just so fantastic, that I went, I want to do this. But it was interesting the way people react to it, the way they see you. Because when I started talking to my wife about it, and my sisters and people around me, they all go, oh, you're not that big. They obviously see me in a different light. Whereas I go, well, you can't feel how, you know, tough it is, how sore my ankles are and my knees are and my hips and so forth. Because I'm out there, you know, moving around. I'm a 50-year-old and I'm running around following the boys in sport on the weekend, and I'm an avid walker. I had this dog for about 10 years, and everybody in the neighbourhood around where I live said, that's the most walked dog in the neighbourhood. I was out there walking him all the time.
Yeah.
But I was doing all this exercise. I was doing that, but I just wasn't taking off any weight. It was just getting harder and harder and harder. So about last year in August, I had the operation myself. It's a huge step. It was a huge choice. Anytime you have surgery, it's a massive choice. I mean, things can go wrong. And I know that's probably what my wife thought, even though she used to be a nurse before she was a teacher. She's going, oh, what if something goes wrong? And that's the risk you take, I suppose, in life. If you want to make a change, you've got to take a little bit of a risk and take a bit of a punt And so I did. And doing a little bit of research about this particular procedure, there's a lot of people, Australians, who are overweight. So apparently it's 25% plus of the population. And last year in Australia, there were around 25, 30,000 people that had this same operation that took the punt to save their life. Statistically, apparently, most of them are women, because men sort of are, in terms of issues with their medical issues, men are always the last ones to make that decision.
Yeah, so how much weight have you lost then?
I've lost 30 kilograms.
That's insane to think about, 30 kilograms. How do you feel?
Absolutely the best I've felt in years. It's an amazing feeling to walk around pretty well pain free. Like, I've had this dodgy ankle for probably 15 years, and when you're not carrying 30 kilograms on you,
that's right.
The ankle was permanently swollen, and now it's not anymore. It's just amazing.
Because pilgrims listening to this now would think about the weight of their pack, and you think to yourself, oh, well, you know, I mean, you're supposed to only carry 10% of your body weight. That's the kind of unwritten law. So you're carrying 30 kilos around extra all day, every day, getting in and out of bed, getting in and out of the shower, getting in and out of the car. Must have been an extraordinary journey. And then, so did you lose weight on the Camino? Because you went back, you've just finished walking it. We're going to talk about that now. Did you lose weight on that actual walk?
The second Camino?
Yeah.
I did, but not a huge amount. So it's interesting when you're in there, interesting in terms of trying to find a place to weigh yourself when you're on the Camino.
Right.
I remember going into an albergue and I tried to communicate with the Spanish hospitalero. I said, do you have any bathroom scales? And he looked at me like I was talking...
English.
Yeah, English. And... So I put it into my Google Translate, bathroom scales, and even when I put bathroom scales into my Google Translate, the guy's just shaking his head, he's looking at me. And then I like pointed to my stomach and I want to, you know, and he says, oh, you go to the pharmacy. All the pharmacies there have these machines where you put 20 cents into, and it pumps out your height and your weight. And... So I went in, I'd been walking for about 3 weeks, and I thought, I'm feeling like I'm taking off a little bit of weight. And so I went in and I weighed myself, and I'd taken off in the first 3 weeks about another 3 kilograms.
Right.
And then by the time I got to the end, I'd probably taken off another one. So by the end, I'd taken off about another 4 kilograms. And when my wife first saw me, because she started with me and walked for about a week, and then she left, and then she came back and met me in Santiago. She looked at me and went, oh, I think she was a little bit shocked. But I believe that the issue was more dehydration, because in the next week or two, I put a couple of kilos back on. So I got back to my stable weight, which has been around 90 kilograms. Mm-hmm. So it was more dehydration. That's one of the issues when you have this operation, is that your stomach is smaller.
Yeah.
And so... if you're thirsty or hungry, there's so much that you can actually fit into it. So therefore, you've got to be doing things. You've got to plan a little bit. So you've got to be drinking in small amounts regularly. Okay, you can't go, oh, I'm really thirsty, and then chug back a couple of liters of water, because, well, first of all, your stomach isn't that big. And so I probably was, at the end of it, I was probably just a little bit dehydrated. But that changed when I got back into a routine, my stable weight.
So you've just returned. So what months did you walk? First of all, that's the first question. Was it very busy? Like, did you always get a bed?
Yeah, we pretty well did the whole of May. So we started the beginning of May and I finished early June. And it was actually really busy to start off with. Coming in through the Pyrenees, the first day it was raining and we got to Orison, and I knew that my wife was with me for the first week, and she wasn't confident that she could get all the way to Roncesvalles, so I booked a place at Orison, and I can tell you that was the best decision that I ever made, because it was pouring with rain, it was freezing cold, and you've got 8 kilometres of pretty well walking in an upward direction. And we also got the train from Beirut across, so we didn't really get to Saint-Jean till about 10 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, so we got to Orison, and the place was teeming with people, like-minded people, that said, please, give me a bed. Unfortunately, the place was booked out, so a lot of people were being pushed away to various other places. So, yeah, so we got to Orison, it was really busy. We got to Roncesvalles, the place was packed. A lot of people were moving on to Baguette, the next little town. And then that first week or so, Zabiri, so many people were pushed out of Zabiri, because apparently the municipal albergue, which has 160 beds, was being renovated.
Right.
So there were 160 less beds there. So people were getting to Zabiri, and they were jumping in there, jumping in a taxi and going to Pamplona, only to jump in a taxi the next day to come back to Zabiri so they could do the walk.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was busy. After Pamplona, then it was busy, but it wasn't packed. You know, we got a bed every night. Sometimes we booked, sometimes we didn't. We just rolled the dice.
Okay, so you stayed in albergues pretty much on that second trip around, so you had the posh experience first time, this time albergues. If that being the case, what did you make of them? How did you find the experience?
Well, obviously it's a mixture of experiences. There are days where you loved it, and there were days where you went, this is the most uncomfortable place I've ever slept in my life. And then there were other days that were great. But I mean, I don't think the experience is about the bed you sleep in. It's more about the people that you meet and the places that you go to. And that's the experience. And that's what you do when you sleep, when you're going to those hostels, albergues, because that's where the people are. That's where there's all these people. You know, sometimes there's 30 or 40, or it could be a hostel with 100. That's your opportunity to have that experience, to meet people and find out a little bit about them. Yeah.
Yeah, and did you get lost?
Yes. Did I get lost? This was later on. I did get lost one day. So towards the end of the experience, I got to Samos, beautiful town Samos, and Samos. I was by myself then. That was probably the second or third day. Pretty well up to then, I was with my little Camino family, but I'd broken away from them because I needed to hurry up, because I needed to get to Santiago, because my wife was meeting me there, basically. Anyway, so I got up in Samos. It was about 7 o'clock in the morning, beautiful, cool, crisp morning. And a lot of people wouldn't go the Samos way. They would go a different way. So there wasn't a lot of people. So I got up in the morning, and you start walking, and you get to a little point in the road where the arrow goes, go this way, and that's follow the road, or go this way and follow the track. And like a good pilgrim, you follow the track and you don't walk along the road if you can, because the road's a little bit on the boring side. So I got up, and there were two people in front of me. There was a young couple in front of me. And I thought, good, I'll just follow them. Anyway, so they're a little bit younger than me and a little bit faster. And as time went on, they sort of, I lost them. And I kept looking behind, and I'm thinking, okay, there's no one behind me either. This was pretty well the first time that I was on the Camino where I truly went, oh, I'm actually by myself, because pretty well all the other ways that I'd gone, I had people next to me or people in front of me or people behind me. It was busy enough. It was May. Anyway, so I'm walking along and I'm thinking, where are these guys? And so I'm following signs. Well, I thought I was following signs of arrows, sorry. I thought I was following arrows, and the track was getting a little bit narrow, and I think, oh, this is the Camino Trail. Hundreds of thousands of people walk the Camino Trail every year. And most of the tracks are well-trodden and, you know, hard and rocky or muddy or whatever. And all of a sudden, the track got a little bit thinner. It sort of became a single track. And then all of a sudden, I went, oh, what's that on my face? That's a cobweb. And I'm thinking, well, I wonder how there's a cobweb there where those two people that I saw in front of me, they would have hit the cobweb first. And so I'm walking along and I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I? So I'm having a look, and I've got my little Camino Frances app, which someone had put me onto, and it's got a little GPS tracker on it, and it's got all the paths that you can take, all the ways and the alternative paths. So I turn it on, but I wasn't getting any reception because I was in the middle of nowhere. So I kept thinking, will I keep going or will I go back? It's one of those little decisions. You go, if I go back to where I think I may have gone the wrong way, that might be 2 or 3 kilometres. So I'm like, maybe I'll just push on. So I eventually got some reception on my phone, and I worked out that I had a little river stream on the right-hand side of me. And when the app actually worked, it worked out that the track was on the right-hand side of the river. And I'm like thinking, crap, what am I going to do? So I thought, oh, I can see, this is coming up to Saria. So I can see maybe there's something ahead, or maybe I'll just jump in the river and just get across to the other side. Anyway, so I kept walking, and what happened? The Camino provides. There was a bridge. The bridge, across the bridge, and I walked another, say, 3 minutes, and all of a sudden there were people everywhere.
Right.
So I did get lost, but I was found.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned before the Albergo experience and how you could have good days and bad days. I think that's a good description of the entire Camino experience. Some days you think, this is great, and other days you think, oh man, what am I doing? It's so difficult. But did you have a favourite place? Somewhere that you just thought, this is fantastic, I could come back here regularly?
Okay, well, did I have a favourite place? I'm not sure if I'd come back here regularly, but probably my favourite albergue was the albergue, I'm pretty sure it was in Tosantos. It was a parochial albergue. It was a Donativo place. And I got there with my Camino friend Nick. And it was his idea. He said, we've got to have this experience. This is the, and a few people had told us about it. You know, you go there and you sleep on gym mats, and you get to help make dinner. And I thought, oh, well, let's go for it. The sleep on the gym mats, we'll probably leave that one. There was about 15 of us cramped into this little attic at the top of the albergue.
Yeah.
But the rest of the experience was what it was all about. It was about 5 o'clock. About 10 of us converged on the kitchen, and we were peeling potatoes, and we were chopping vegetables, and we were cutting up bread. My job was to cut up more bread than you've ever seen in your life, to put in this massive pot, which was making garlic soup. I love how they call it garlic soup, because I'd call it bread soup, because it was pretty well a pot full of bread with a little bit of garlic and a few other herbs and a bit of water that was boiled.
I love that soup.
Yeah, it was actually quite good. Yeah, I think it's quite funny when you're having the soup and there's bread on the table, so you're having garlic bread soup with bread.
That's very funny.
And then the potato salad, that Russian potato salad. So that was the fun part. Helping make, and the Spanish hospitalero was in the kitchen singing songs, and we're all humming along with him. It's all in Spanish, and I've got no Spanish. Then we went to dinner, and he gets everybody to sing a song, but they didn't get to Australia. They went to every country, but they didn't get to Australia. I was thinking, what am I going to sing? You know, Waltzing Matilda or Timey Kangaroo Down or something like that. And but then probably the best part was actually the prayers after. So we went up to the little prayer room, which is right at the top of the albergue. Actually, it's right next to where we were sleeping. and had all these prayers in this box, and people had written these prayers. And the way that it goes, the prayers were written 21 days or 20 odd days before, because they say that this albergue in Tos Santos is about 3 weeks from Santiago. So we were reading out prayers for that people had left there that were just probably in Santiago and just finishing. And it was a really... And they were all in different languages as well. So if there was a French person in the room, they'd be reading out the prayer in French, and, you know, a couple of English people, some Spanish, Italian.
What a great story.
And we read out these prayers, and it was so moving. I mean, I was only understanding the ones in English because my language is pathetic. But then we got to write our own prayers. Not then, but before we left, in the morning... We went to give our donation, and there was a little book there and some pens and paper to write your own prayer. And I was sitting there going, "Well, this is writing a prayer for to myself when I was going to be finishing in the next in 3 weeks
what
away."
A great story. Yeah.
So it's a great spot. If you want luxury accommodation, that's not where you'd be going.
We paused for a moment to move into the sun. It was getting a bit cold in the shade. And I asked Andrew about something he wrote to me. He said that he'd had such a fantastic experience, but he may not have had the same experience and even the confidence to achieve what he had if he'd been so overweight.
That's hard to explain. You know, for when someone is overweight, I mean, I've had lived with it for a lot of my life, but especially for the youth. I mean, I teach in a school, and you know, people that are overweight are ostracized by society. So so it's a really tough thing to deal with, and it can wear away your confidence. And I've often considered myself to be a reasonably confident person, but, you know, when you get bigger and bigger and you've got aches and pains and you've got all these worries, I just don't know how my walk would have gone if I'd just come back and walked at 120 kilos. Actually, physically, I don't think I would have been able to walk for 5 weeks at 120 kilograms plus 8 or 9 kilo pack that I was carrying. You know, so that's me carrying around 130 kilos. So physically, it would have been tough, but sort of internally as well, I probably would have just got to a place and just died and lay down and not had the energy even to socialize, which is one of the biggest things. You get to the end of the day and, you know, you have a little bit of a rest. And then it's all about, you know, you're in an albergue or you're close to a bar or something like that. And it's catching up with all those people.
Mm. Like, that's wonderful, isn't it?
It's catching up with the people that you talk to. Hey, you know, during the day they go, "Hey, we're going to meet for a drink," or, "Hey, we're going to do dinner tonight." If you're so physically exhausted at the end of the day, all you want to do is just go and sleep. You wouldn't have the energy to do all that, and you'd miss out on probably the most important part of the Camino, which is that aspect, that social aspect, the people.
Yeah. And I read a lot of your blog, and you were really going through a transition because in many ways, the way I kind of read it, it was, you know, Andrew, you were saying goodbye to old Andrew and hello to new Andrew. Have you had a chance to read it back? And I wondered then what you've made of it since, now that you've been back a few months.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I read it back, and it makes me feel really good.
Yeah, sure.
Internally, yeah. It makes me feel really good that I achieved something. I mean, I come back and I say... And people go, "Oh, what did you do on your long service leave, on my break?" "Oh, walked 800 kilometres across Spain." You know, I mean, that's an achievement in itself. But I did it with 30 less kilograms, and I met a whole lot of amazing people on the way. So it's one of the best experiences that I've ever had in my life. It truly is, yeah.
Tell us about the actual process of blogging. Did you write it on a laptop or an iPad? You took an iPad.
Yeah. I took my iPad with me. And I actually blogged on an app called Journey.
I was about to ask about that.
Yeah. I got introduced to this the year before because one of the teachers from my posh experience, she was actually, it was quite a few of them actually. There were a few of them that were using this Journey app. And at the end of the process, so you write some words every day, and people that are following me can see it on this Journey app, along with you're allowed to put 10 photos on there. And at the end of it, you actually click a button, and they actually send you a hardcover book with all of your blogging and all of your photos. I haven't got it yet. I only bought it about a week ago. I think it takes a couple of weeks to come, but it's. But I've seen the versions that others have from last year, from the 2018 version. It's amazing. It's just a hard covered. It's like a coffee table book that you can have at home and you can pick it up. It's a little bit different to like. I love the coffee table book. You know, someone comes in and goes, "Ah, what's this? Oh, wow! Flick through. Oh, there, that's great. Oh, look, that's your story about your Camino experience and your photos and so forth."
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not spelt Journey, is it? How's it spelt?
It's Journey with an I, so J-O-U-R-N-I.
Right.
Yes.
And it's an app, so forgive me, it's a vulgar question, but how much does it cost for the book?
The book cost about 120 Australian, it was about €80 or so, with delivery from overseas. Yeah,
that's not too bad. It'd be a lovely thing to have, something that you could show around, I mean, something real. You took thousands of photographs, though. Did you stop? I mean, if you're taking that many photographs, doesn't it take you like 10 hours to walk each day?
You know what the beauty about walking in a group is? The beauty about another app is WhatsApp, is that other people put their photos and then your phone will automatically save all their photos as well. So you've got everybody in the group's photos. So in the first experience, we had 17 people on a WhatsApp group. And people were taking photos, and so the whole group had everybody else's photos. So you had thousands of photos, and this time as well, I don't know if I have thousands of photos, but we were doing much the same thing. Our little group, we were sharing photos with each other, and so forth. So we, you know, maybe we took 10 or 20 photos a day, but when you multiply that by however many people in the group, now you've got 100 photos per day. So yeah.
You know. I want to get back to your journey and your transformation. Did you think much about the achievement while you were walking? Did you think much about, was it really part of your consciousness? You know, I'm lucky to even be here, to be doing this.
Yeah, well, the Camino is all about thinking. It's all about time to yourself. It's all about reflection. It's all about discernment. It's these are all words from my education.
Yeah.
When you work in a Jesuit school, we have this thing called the Ignatian pedagogical paradigm. So you experience, you reflect, and then you are spurned into action. And when you're on the Camino. You're experiencing something that's unique that a lot of people don't get a chance to experience. And then you have all this time to reflect. And yes, you're walking with people. I had a great group of Camino buddies that I walked with, but that didn't mean that we were talking 8 hours a day. So you have all this time to reflect. And a lot of the time, I was reflecting about my journey and thinking, hey, I couldn't have done this 12 months ago, and look how far I've come. I'm the healthiest I've probably been in years. No, I don't even want to think about how many years it is, but it was the healthiest I've been in years, and look what I'm achieving here. Like, if I said to other people that I was going to walk 35, 40 kilometres in a day, people would be laughing. I remember around Sydney, we have this beautiful thing called the Seven Bridges Walk every year, which I've been on a couple of times, and that's 28 kilometres. And the first time I did it, I think I had to take 2 days off work. It's like I had to take 2 days off walk because I walked the seven bridges around beautiful Sydney, and then I spent the next 2 days limping around work. Yeah, but by the end of it, when I had my last week of my Camino, when I'd broken away from my group and I was by myself, I'm thinking, God, I'm doing 35 kilometer days. I'm doing it with ease. And I could keep going.
Yeah.
I could keep going, and I did want to keep going past Santiago, but it's sort of on a bit of a time constraint, so we didn't. And I'm glad I didn't, because I actually stayed in Santiago for a couple of days and met my Camino friends as they came in over the next couple of days, which was a great experience. Yeah.
And you wrote to me to say being overweight or obese is a real societal issue on a healthy living level, but also a mental health level. And that's a critical point, isn't it? The mental health aspect of being obese. It must play on your mind every day. And you've been able to cast a lot of that aside.
Yeah, but not everybody can. Not everybody that's overweight can do that. I mean, I personally learnt to live with it, but a lot of people don't. They don't. They get ridiculed by society because they're overweight, and that, you know, that leads them further spiraling down and, into depression and all those sorts of things. Now, I've never been able to do that, and I think in my life it was more to do with the fact that I got acceptance through the fact that I was actually good at sport, and I played sport, and being big in football, rugby, is actually an advantage. But if I wasn't good at sport, I sometimes think, I wonder if I wasn't good at playing rugby, or if I wasn't good at some of these other sports where I made a whole lot of friends, really good friends. If I wasn't good at that, what would my life have been like? Because a lot of overweight people find it really hard, because that's just our society, is that we sort of look down on people that are overweight. What can we do about that? It's not an easy thing. It's like people look at you and go, "Well, just take off the bloody weight."
Yeah. No.
But it's not that easy. Like, for years and years, I've been on diets. And everybody knows, you go on diets, you take some weight off, and then you stop that diet and you just put it back on.
Yeah.
You stop doing what you were doing, you put it back on. I went on a diet, a really popular one, high-protein diet. I ended up getting gout, because gout is a problem where you eat too much protein. Eating too much protein is really good for taking off weight. But if your body's susceptible to gout, and all of a sudden you get this thing where you can't move your toes and your knees because they've got all these little crystals that's what gout is, crystals of uric acid in your joints, it's like, okay, oh, I can't do that protein diet anymore, because if I do that, I'm not going to be able to walk around.
Yeah.
Because I've got a swollen knee.
And I get gout if I eat too many prawns for some reason.
Yes.
So every January, or after Christmas every year, I think, oh no, and it wakes me up in the middle of the night, and it's the worst thing. I can't stand it. But you mentioned there about this kind of sedentary lifestyle, in a sense, becoming part of your psyche. It's very important then, and you working with young people, I think it's very important that I ask that question, because when I was a kid, we used to ride bikes and we'd swim and we played football and we played cricket and we were constant. I remember Mum would ring a bell at night. We'd come out of, the bloke across the street said you'd see Mullins boys climbing out of chimneys out from under cars and coming home on bicycles and stuff. We it's an entirely different generation now. And I know a lot of people listening would have children, perhaps even grandchildren. There's a very powerful message in that too, isn't there? That we need to be mindful of the power of exercise in healthy living, healthy mental health.
Absolutely. You and I are brought up in the same generation. I spent my childhood riding a bike all around the place, playing every sport, but we didn't have We didn't have the iPad. We didn't have the phone. We didn't have all of the computer games that pretty well tie you down and sit you down. And so my life in my work is about getting kids out playing sport.
Fantastic.
And unfortunately in our society, things are changing because, like, a lot of people in our busy lifestyles, parents' busy lifestyles, they don't have a lot of time to get their kids to sport on the weekend. And, you know, when my parents were like that, but I was brought up in a different generation because my parents, they ran a business and they worked on the weekends. But I jumped on my bike and took myself to my sport, or I jumped on the bus or I jumped on the train. And these days parents don't do that. Or parents go, if you're going to play, you know, a game of whatever, basketball, cricket, rugby, I've got to drive you there, you know, that type of thing. And a lot of them will go, well, I can't drive you there, so you know, I'm not going to register for you to play in that sport. And it's a real problem for society. We need our kids to get out and exercise, and get away from the screen. Because it's got all these, you know, exercise, as we know, is great for your mental health. It's so great. I can't imagine how sitting at a screen all day is good for your mental health.
Mm. Let's go back to the Camino. What's the best part about being a pilgrim?
Nothing to worry about. Really? You get up, you have the odd worry that you might not get a bed at night, but that never happened to me, so I didn't experience that. but there's no worries. You just get up and you walk, and it's just a simple life that takes you so far removed from what all of us do in our daily lives. Like, I get up in the morning and I go, I gotta go to work. I've got to get 1,500 kids on the sporting field on the weekend, and I've got 200 coaches that I've got to make sure they turn up to train them, and blah blah blah. That's what I do for a living. I got to go to the Camino, and I got to get up in the morning to get up in the morning, and all I had to do was grab my pack and start walking. It's a simple life that really, in terms of just getting away and recharging and renewing and regenerating, I just can't recommend it more to people. And I want to go back and do more.
So do I. I'm really, I tell you, I'm getting the pull. It's like the draw is just so powerful at the moment. What did you find most challenging about the Camino?
Getting enough sleep. That's probably the most challenging. When you are in those albergues, think about it. You're in a different bed every night. You're on a different mattress. getting a comfortable sleep, that's probably one of the most challenging things. When you're going on the Camino and you're going to be by yourself, the challenge that was probably in my mind beforehand was, will anybody talk to me or anything like that? Well, that's laid to rest after a couple of days. I did start with my wife, and she walked to Pamplona, and then she left with a horrendous blister on her heel, and went off to she's Scottish, and she went off to Scotland and spent some time with her family, and then 4 weeks later came back to meet me. So now I was by myself, and literally took me about half a day. I stopped for lunch. I was sitting having some lunch all by myself outside a cafe, and there was this Scottish guy and an American woman. They're sitting there, and I just overheard them talking, and I just chimed into their conversation, and I ended up walking the next 4 weeks with that Scottish guy. You know, it's as simple as that. And we picked up other people on the way that you meet, and as you know, these people become, well, they become your lifelong friends.
Yeah, right. They do. It's fantastic. It's such a great community. Not necessarily even of people, but perhaps of souls. Because you sort of think, well, I kind of sense them, those people. Even though they're not here, I can kind of sense them. It's a lovely feeling. It really is. Tell us about arriving in Santiago de Compostela.
Well, it was the second time I got there. But when I arrived, there's a little bit of a funny story. I was walking by myself, and I had actually spent the last night in La Covala, which is only 10 kilometres away, so that I wanted to have a short walk so that I could get to the Pilgrim's Mass, so time it for the midday Pilgrim's Mass. Unfortunately, Santiago Cathedral is closed at the moment, so the Pilgrim's Mass is not in the cathedral, it's in the little mini cathedral, which is just down the road, which for pilgrims this year is a bit disappointing to not go to the main cathedral. But I'm walking into the town, and I'm literally 50 metres from the steps where you go down, where the bagpipes are playing,
yeah.
Morning, moon and night.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get to a little road crossing, and I see these two people in front of me. And I go, oh, my God, these are two. There's an Australian couple that I met 4 weeks ago and had walked probably the first week, and they had walked with my wife, so my wife knew them as well. And I knew that I would have gone past them by a mile, and I just walked up to them and said, where did you guys come from? And the cat was out of the bag. They said they woke up in Sarria that morning, and this was like their fourth or fifth time that they'd walked the Camino. They woke up in Sarria, and they just went, they looked at each other and went, I've had enough. They jumped on a bus and took a bus to Santiago, which just got off there, literally just there where I'd seen them. And they didn't want to tell anybody that they cheated, but
you caught them out.
So I caught them out, and so I ended up walking to Santiago with them, which is really nice, beautiful couple from the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and I'd love to catch up with them at some time. So the three of us ended up walking in together, and you walk in, and for me it's that feeling that you've just successfully finished, you've completed a journey, you've fulfilled something that you really wanted to do, you've achieved something. It was a real sense of achievement. With all the change in my life that I'd been through, and the losing of the weight and everything, it was like this culmination. I'd gone, yeah, I've done it. And it was a really good feeling. And then it was good to see my wife after not seeing her for a month as well.
Yeah. Tell us a Camino story.
Okay, so the Camino's an interesting place in terms of the people that you meet along the way. And so I remember I was in Burgos this is not really part of the story, but I got myself a... During the journey, I got two places where I got a nice place. And we did it. My Camino family, we all decided that Burgos and Leon were our two cities where we were getting a hotel, and we were just going to be by ourselves and have our own room and our own bathroom and not share with 20, 40, 100 people. Anyway, so I got to Burgos, and the place that I had... I really wanted to have a massage. I felt like I needed a massage. And I got in there, and they go, oh, sorry, all the massages are taken in this particular hotel. But the girl goes, but we've got this pool and spa downstairs. And I went, oh, okay. So went downstairs, and there was this pool and spa, and fantastic. I had an hour there all by myself, nobody else. Had all these jets, so it was just like having a massage. But anyway... So then I went outside, and I was trying to catch up with some people, and I think it took too much out of me. And so I think I was feeling a little bit queasy, a little bit maybe dehydrated or something. And I was sitting in the middle of Burgos in this little park, just watching people walk past. And this woman, Donna, who I'd met back in Orison the very first day, and she kept popping up everywhere. And this is part of the story. She came up and she said, oh, hey, how are you doing? And I said to her, I'm not feeling the best, I'm just feeling a bit queasy. I might just walk back to the hotel and just have a bit of a rest, because I was going to meet some people later on for dinner. And as we walked, it was about a 500 metre walk back to the hotel, the two of us probably stopped 10, 15, 20 times and talked to people, people that the two of us had met, and pretty well a lot of them were in common. And by the time we got back to my hotel, I looked at Donna and I said, "Have you ever been to Burgos before?" She said, "No." Isn't it interesting how many people that we know in Burgos today? Did you just notice that we just spent the last half an hour stopping and talking? And it's a unique thing about the Camino. It's so unique. If I flew to Burgos today and walked through the streets, I'd know nobody. But because I'd been walking the Camino and we'd been walking and meeting people along the way, a lot of the people were there in Burgos were people that had walked around the same pace as us, people that we'd had coffees with or we'd even just said hello to. And it's such a unique thing. I'm like, isn't this amazing? I knew 30 or 40 people in Burgos.
I love that because, you know, and by the time you get to León, you could quadruple that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And by the time we got to Santiago, I got to Santiago, but a couple of days later when my... So I'd sped up and I got a couple of days ahead of them. But by the time my Camino buddies came in, we decided to meet up for dinner. And so one of the people that I was walking with, the Scottish guy, Nick, he goes, "We're meeting at such and such place for dinner." Anyway, so I turned up with my wife and there are about 40 people at the table. And I'm like, this is just amazing. There were 40 people, and out of the 40 people at the table, I probably knew 30 of them.
Yeah.
And from the journey.
Yeah.
And so, and it's a word of mouth thing as well. Like, someone told somebody, "Hey, there's a dinner on tonight." Somebody told another person, "There's a dinner on," and it's all these people that you'd walked with and you'd got to know along the way. And
fabulous.
And there was probably close to 40 people there.
Yeah,
it was just amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. So where to from here? You've had this new lease on life, a new energy. Where to? What's next?
I've got to go back. I've got to go back and do it again. I don't know when, but I'm sure I will. But there's other journeys. So my posh group, they're organising a Camino in Italy, possibly next year. So that's in its early stages. And also my school that I teach at, a few people are talking about doing a Camino Ignacio. And the Camino Ignacio is tracing the steps of St. Ignatius. And so that one starts in San Sebastian and sort of comes down to some of the cities that St. Ignatius was in. And it comes through Pamplona. When we were in Pamplona, I went to there's a statue of St. Ignatius in Pamplona because he protected the city against the French invaders in 1520. And it's famous in his life story because that's where he was hit by a cannonball and he broke his leg and spent the next year recovering, and that's when he changed his life and the direction of his life. So there's the school that I work in, and the school's named after. And he's a guy who changed the direction of his life, and that's kind of what I'm doing and what a lot of people are doing when they walk. So the Camino Ignacio is something that's I've got some interest in as well. Yeah.
Well, good luck. I hope you keep on walking and learning and spreading a very important message. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with you today. Thanks so much for your time and your energy and for reaching out to me to tell your story, because I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you. Buen Camino.
Buen Camino, Dan.
My guest this week, the Australian pilgrim Andrew Szabo. We were in a little cafe opposite the New South Wales Art Gallery on the fringe of Sydney's Domain, near the Royal Botanical Gardens. Wherever you're listening, I hope you're celebrating and loving life. Your pilgrimage. The American novelist and poet Roman Payne said, "A person does not grow from the ground like a vine or a tree. One is not part of a plot of land. Mankind has legs so it can wander in wonder." The new album Duende is out and available for purchase online all around the world. You just go to danmullinsmusic.com. Life is good. Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino.